Tel un sommeil. Before we commence, let us all take a moment to bring our palms together and make our veneration to the perfect one, the undefeated one, the unvanquished one, our master, our teacher, and our guide. Let us also remind ourselves on this occasion that this is more than a mere demonstration of our obeisance. It is a pledge of our allegiance to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, reminding ourselves of our purpose here. Let us then observe the precepts, invite the Devas, Brahmas and all sentient beings who seek the path to liberation, to join us and be part of this tremendously meritorious deed that we are all about to embark upon. And with that, let us commence with today's proceedings. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Permission from the Noble Triple Gem. Silvanian answer. And devout listeners of the Buddha's teachings. So we're in a new hall today. All nicely done up. Thank you. And thank you to the school who have gone the extra mile actually on our behalf. I don't think this would have been necessary if not for this sermon. If not for this sermon, meaning you, the community. These are investments that people make not for gain in this lifetime. Because in this lifetime it's a loss, isn't it? It's an expense. If you check the bank account, then it's an expense. Doesn't seem like anything's being gained. This is why people tend to spend when it's for them, but they tend to be thrifty when it's for others. People tend to be a bit stingy, especially when it comes to spending on others. Sometimes when it's for you, you go out and spend everything. You know, usually what happens is you have more month left at the end of the money. It's not the money's fault, is it? It's the month's fault. The month is just too long. They pay you for 20 days, but then the month comes in 30 days. So it's the month's fault that the month outlives your paycheck. But that is typical when we go spending for ourselves. There's never enough. But when we have to spend on others, they're asking for too much. That's how we always feel. They always ask for too much. Why don't they understand that I don't have as much as they think I do? This is all because people are very short-sighted, ladies and gentlemen. They're very short-sighted. People are too short-sighted for their own good. They fail to see that the universe has a record of all of their actions. The universe is always fair. Nature is always fair. Give me a show of hands if you were there at yesterday's sermon. Anyway, what was I talking about? Spending on ourselves and spending on others. So something I talked about yesterday, and I think it's pretty useful for all of us to know. We forget that our interactions are not with each other. In other words, we always feel that our interactions are with each other. So for instance, If you answer this question for me, if you lend something to someone, okay, or if you give something to someone, let's say lend something to someone, who is it that must return it? Who? Them. Who is them? The person who borrowed it from you, right? There is a flaw in that thinking. We are so used to thinking like that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm about to explain to you that that is wrong. Because you think like that, it's a very narrow-minded way of thinking. Because you think like that, you start to have accounts with each other, interactions with each other. You think that when you lend something to someone, it is they who has to return it to you. But that is not so. Your dealings are not with each other in this world. Your dealings are with nature, with the universe. If you lend some money to someone, which is a typical example, you lend someone some money, they come and say, you know, it's a bit difficult these days, I'm going through a rough time, can I borrow some money from you? So you trust them. You trust whom? You trust them, the person who asks you for the money, and you lend them that money. Right? Most of you have done that. And most of you have learned a lesson out of that. Haven't we? Yes. But then you trusted them again. Or trusted someone else again. And then you lent again. And what did they do? Just as the first one had done, again, they broke your trust. So what happens is, two or three times down the line, you come to this conclusion. These people, they just come and ask me for my things. And they never return them. Right? They borrow my money, but they never return it. So what am I going to do from now on? Not going to lend again. Never again will I fall into that trap. Never again will I trust anyone with my money. I'm not going to lend again. They can work and they can earn for themselves. I'm not going to be lending to anyone. This is a conclusion that the average mind comes to. Actually, it's the mind that has not understood the workings of the universe. I want you to see beyond that, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when you start to think that you are an individual and everyone else in this room are also individuals, you think very small. How big are you? At most 6 foot? If you're lucky. Most of us are south of that number, right? We have this, you know, really tall friends at school. So we ask him, how's the weather up there? And then they'd ask us, you know, how's down south? You didn't even have to be from down south and they asked you that question. But most of us, right, you know, let's say 6 foot is about the tallest that the average person is. Why am I talking about height? I lost my train of thought. Huh? How big? Yes, thank you. At least someone's paying attention. So how big are you? That big, right? So you're this big and you're that big. You have a length and a width. When you identify yourself with your body, that is the first mistake you make. That is why you say, when I was younger, I was smaller. And then what happened? You grew up. You grew big. So you were small back then and now you're big. What do you want? What did you want to do when you were small? You want to be big. You wanted to grow up. Yeah? So ask any kid. What do they want to be? I mean, they'll say, I want to be doctors, I want to be engineers, I want to be lawyers, this, that and the other. But behind all of that, there'll be something else they'll also want to be. That is to be a grown-up. They want to be a grown-up. Because they look up at you like this. Whoa, he's big. That's how they see you. And then you are calling, hey, little ones, come here. And that really hits them. Because they don't like to be little ones. But what happens is that the irony of it is, when you grow up, what do you want to be? You want to be the little one. Yes. If only we could turn back time and go back to being those little ones. I know. So the first mistake we make, ladies and gentlemen, is identify ourselves with the size of our physical being. That's the first mistake we make. That's why when you stand next to an elephant or a giraffe, remember the last time you went to the Sattuvatta? I don't know why people bother going. Right? When you go to the zoo, right, you go and see these big animals. When you first found out how big a whale was, the blue whale, so typically what they do is, if you read about it on a textbook or something, they put a man next to it for comparison. Right? So you look at the whale, you look at the man and go, what? There are things that big? And then you hear about mammoths who used to live in the dinosaur era. Then we go and stand next to an elephant. Why does the sight of an elephant really... Why is it so breathtaking? Why? It's because you're small. It's because you think you're small, that's why. Think about this carefully. Don't just take it at surface level. Right? Just because you understood the first time I said it, you know, yeah, got it. Next thing, Swami knows, what's the next thing? This is not like a starters, then we go to the main course, then we go to dessert. It's not like that. You got to, you know, you got to chew on this properly. Give it time. There are several layers of understanding anything, especially when it comes to the truth. There are so many layers of understanding, ladies and gentlemen. Some are pretty abstract. But for others, you have to really pay attention and focus. And then, when you have all the right things set in place, you come to a realization, oh, I didn't realize that. That is so profound. That is what Swaminarayan has been talking about. That's when that light bulb goes off. But then the thing is, it's like a series of light bulbs. So they'll start going off one at a time. First will be dim, the next one will be a little bit brighter, the next one will be brighter, it will be yet brighter, and that's how it's going to be. So don't take any of this at just surface level. In fact, if at the end of this talk I gave each of you an interview or asked you questions about the sermon, you will each have a different version of the sermon. Some will have understood it the way I meant to express myself. Others will have understood what they have understood. And that's the way it is. We can't do anything about it. But what I'm saying is, don't take anything at surface level. Do try it. Even if you understand something, keep your mind open. Maybe there's another layer to this. So don't come to a conclusion that I got it, which is something I never do. Sometimes Guru Handra comes up to me and he says something that I've heard a million times. But I listen to it as if this is the first time I'm hearing it. I take my time with it and I repeat what I hear and say, is this what you meant, Guru Maharaj? And 9 times out of 10, when I repeat it, he says, no, that's not what I meant. You just repeated what you've heard me say before. This is not what I meant now. There's a slight nuance to it. And then he explains that to me. So I've learned that lesson. I'm reminding you that, you know, never to take anything just at surface level. There are things beyond that. So anyway, coming back to the point. When you see your child, for those of you who have children, when you see your child, you think that they're small. You see, you don't just think that the body is small, you think they are small, don't you? You don't think that my child is as big as I am, but the body is small. Is that how you see them? Who's under 16 here? Any under 16s? There's one at the back. Yes, any under 16s? How old are you? 21. What are you doing here then? We have one under 16. Okay. So let's take that Putta, right? He's about this tall. If I asked him to come and stand up here, you'd think that he's small. You don't see that the body is small, but he's as big as I am. Actually, the as big as I am is also flawed. Because what is your size? What is your size? Do you have a size? Are you small, medium, or large? But we say that he's big made. Now she's a bit on the small side. She's big, he's big, right? See, when we look at someone, the first thing we do is we identify them with their bodies. And then they say, he's a big guy. Sometimes you speak to these people you think are big guys. That they're not that big. They're muscular, they're, you know, pretty big in size. And then you speak to them and they, you know, you have a conversation with them. Sometimes you're fearful, you're worried, you're afraid to talk to them even. You say, hello, big guy. And then sometimes they respond in like this, a little squeaky voice. And you never expected that kind of voice to come from them. And then you go, oh. That is your response after that. Where did that come from? It comes from a clash of expectation. You immediately think a person's physical size is also their size. That is so wrong, isn't it? That is why sometimes when you're with little ones, you don't necessarily show the same respect that you might do to elders, adults. So you ask yourself whether this is not true. You know, when we deal with elders or other adults, there's a way you deal with them. But when you deal with younger ones, I'm not saying you got to get down on your knees and worship them. That's not what I mean. Not necessarily what I mean. But take this for instance, okay? Let's say I arrive and then there's a young Samanera Swami Nahansi who comes with me. Young Swami Nahansi, which we don't have at the monastery now. Like, because the youngest Swami Nahansi is 18. Many years ago, we had very young Swami Nansis, now they've grown up. So we had Swami Nansis as young as 12, 13 and so on. Now say a Swami Nansi might be this tall. Okay, so that Swami Nansi comes, walks into this hall. This Swami Nansi walks into the hall. Ask yourself how you might show your respect to those two individuals. You might be different because you are now walking on the path and you're beginning to understand that that is nothing to do with one's understanding of the Dhamma. But typically what tends to happen? People show a great deal of devotion, respect and obeisance to the big Swami Mahansi. Big in what way? Size. And also, what if the Swami Mahansi was elderly? Like maybe, you know, 60s or that sort of thing. The older they are, the more pious you feel towards them. The more respect you tend to show them. But the younger they get, Samaner Bhaktas. Where's the flaw? Size. Because you identify individuals with the size of their bodies. What if that Samanera Swami Nahansi was an Arahant? What if at least he's a Sotapan and the elderly Swami Nahansi is not? He's still a Pratapan. He was only just, perhaps only just ordained. But he's big in size and therefore somehow he deserves more respect. How is that so, ladies and gentlemen? This is where you need to start coming out of this thinking, which is wrong. Again, I ask you the question, what is your size? Are you small? Are you medium? Are you large? Are you extra large? What is your size? But you have to genuinely come with an answer. Not just because I asked this question, I don't have a size. No. There has to come a day where in deep down in your mind, you realize size is not something that is relevant or relates to me. The only thing that can be sized up is your body, which is actually nothing to do with you. Your body is basically everything you've eaten. Some of what you've eaten, the rest of it you expended. Some of what you've eaten is his body. It's actually not you at all. Because if your body, if you study the constituent stuff that your body is made of, you will find the elements on the periodic table. So these are the carbons, the hydrogens, oxygens, nitrogens, and all this stuff. And if you go a step further, you can get protons and electrons and neutrons and so on, right? So if you say that carbons and hydrogens and oxygens are me, then everything else is also me. So if you're made of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, what is the person next to you made of? The same stuff, right? So is he or she also you? Don't try it. See, if you take one hand and touch the other, you only feel that you're touching yourself. Even if you didn't have sensation on this side of the body, imagine you were like only half of your body had any physical sensation, right? So if you touched this, assume that this side is paralyzed, so you have no sensation on this part of the body. But so then when you touch this side of the body with this hand, you can only feel, you can't feel this touch, you can feel this touch, right? Because this side is paralyzed. Paralyzed in the sense, not motor paralyzed, but sensory paralysis. Okay, so you can't feel anything. Now, even if you were in that situation, you would still think that you were touching yourself. But if I ask you to touch someone else, still you can't feel that person. As in, you can't feel what that person feels. You would still only feel what your hand feels when you touch that person. But then you will tell yourself that you're touching someone else. Are they also not still carbon, hydrogen, and oxygens? Aren't they also molecules and atoms? Aren't you also molecules and atoms? Then why is it that they are they and you are you? Where is that discrimination? Where does that distinction happen? Why that distinction? It's because you identify yourselves with this body. That's why, like I said, when you stand next to a tall animal or a tall building for that matter, you feel very small. You compare yourself. That is wrong. It might be difficult to get your head around this because you've always thought this way. That's why you climb up the Eiffel Tower. That's why you like going up these skyscrapers. You like to go up to the whatever floor and then take a vista and see what the surrounding looks like. So when you go, when you know, sightseeing, visiting countries, you typically go and if there's a really tall building, what do? You go up that building. What's the place in Dubai? Burj Khalifa. Yeah, so if ever you visit Dubai, that's a sure-to-visit destination, right? You have to go up that building. Why is that? Because it's the tallest building. It's big. Whereas you are tiny. That's the thing. And there's like, when you see an elephant, you want to get on it, don't you? Not if you're scared of elephants, but otherwise you want to get on the elephant. Because you're small, you want to see what the world looks like when you are that tall. When you are on the elephant, what does the world look like? I mean, that's why you feel like you want to ride an elephant. You don't feel like you want to ride a rabbit. Or your cat. Or a dog or anything. Because, you know, they're smaller than you. In comparison, you know, they're smaller than you. In our minds, ladies and gentlemen, we have this idea that something big means something important. Big is important. Tall is important. It's grand. The smaller you are, the smaller your value. Who here would like to be a dwarf in your next life? Any volunteers? Can I be a dwarf in my next life? I don't think you have to answer that question. Because even if you force an answer out of you, because that is the right thing to say, right? We have to be politically correct and all that, right? You want to be sensitive, you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, right? See, if you see a dwarf on the street, does your head turn like another time? That you just see them on the corner of your eye, but you turn your head again and look at them. It tends to happen. Because in your mind you're thinking, they're small. They're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be big, but they're small. And then you say, something's wrong with them. This is the thought that goes in your head. If your child had dwarfism, parents, I ask you, right? If you're next, let's assume this, the doctors examine you, and then because you want to have a child, and the doctors examine you and say, the next child you're going to have is going to be a dwarf. I have a feeling that most parents would opt not to have the child. You can't shake that feeling. Most parents would opt not to have that child. I'm not talking about downs or anything like that. They have full mental capacity. They have full mental capacity. They're not retarded. There are dwarfs who've gone on to become arahants. They have full mental capacity. They can understand the world just as well as you can. But when you see someone of small size, then they are small, you are big, and something's not right with them. Actually, nothing's not right with them. Something's not right up here with you. It's time you come out of that closet and start to see the world as it really is. So what is your size? To understand what your size is, you need to understand who you are. Who are you? Are you this that's on that seat right now? So when you want to look pretty, what do? You go in front of the mirror, you put on your makeup, and that makes you feel happy, doesn't it? Right? When you put your makeup on, it makes you feel happy. You do your hair, you do your eyebrows. Sorry, Sinman, you know answer, not you. You do your lips, right? You do your face, right? Cleansing and this thing and that thing and all sorts of. I'll stop myself there, or get carried away. You do all that and you look at the final picture in the mirror and you go, why is that? You're happy now. Why are you happy? Because now you are pretty. Who's that you who's pretty? The body. What does that tell you? You are the body. See, you identify yourself with the body. Which is the same reason when you wake up, you don't want anyone coming into your bedroom. Saliva dripping on one side of your mouth. Your hair disheveled. Your dress not proper. You don't want, and you know, what do you call this? On the eyes you get? What is kaba in English? Kaba in English is what? Kabas. Eye mucus. Does anyone know the English term for kaba? Eye mucus. Doctors? Eye mucus? I am discharged. Okay, find out what the word is next time. What are your liners? Do we have a word for it, madam? She's looking it up. Okay. Right, I will have the word in a moment. So these kabbles that you get on the side of your eyes, we used to call it eye kakka. Anything we didn't like was kakka, right? Because that's what Amma said. But that's kakki, put it to a side. The knife was what? When you were younger, the knife, you're not supposed to touch it, play with it, do anything with it, because it was very harmful, right? So it was kakki. Anything that was not good was kakki. So the child goes to school and the teacher asks, what did you bring for lunch? So the child says, my mother made a sandwich, she took some kakki and she put the butter with it. R? How do you pronounce that?
Reem.
Reem. Reem. Okay. Another school day. Thank you. So that's called Reem, by the way. R-H-U-M. R-H-E-U-M. R-H-E-U-M. I Googles. I Googles. I bum. I've heard of I bum. This is a new one. Okay, so I bum. I ream. My Googles. Reams. So there's a plural. Reams? Is that a plural?
Sleepies.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about eye kakka. So you don't want anyone to see you like that, right? So if someone knocked on your door in the morning, you don't want to present yourself like that. So you will make sure you go to the washroom, check yourself, make sure you are presentable. It is not necessarily because you care about what the other person, you know, the sight of Mohini to the other person. You're more concerned really about, you know, you want to look presentable. You want to look nice because you care a lot about how you look. The thing is this, here's the problem. When I ask you why you care about the body, if what you care about is how you look, the answer is simple. I am the body. This is me. So if this is you, then the size of this is? Whose size? My size. This is a problem, ladies and gentlemen. So you size yourself up. Now, forgive me for, I don't know whether this is going to touch a nerve with some people. It's not intended to. It's only, everything I say is with only love and compassion. You need to understand that. Otherwise, don't come here. These are not meant to offend or insult, because that is not my agenda. I understand that what you give is what you get. So I have no intention to hurt, offend or insult anyone. But the thing is this, some things that you hold so dear and so true to you, if they are in conflict with the truth, the universal truths, then you might feel offended. But please understand that it is not meant to offend. It's like when the doctor injects you, right? The syringe, as the needle goes in, it hurts. But that's not what the doctor wants to do. He doesn't want to keep pricking you with the needle. His intention is to administer some kind of, maybe it's a painkiller, but you've got to first give the pain before the painkiller comes in next, right? So that's the way this works. See, when people feel that they are small, one of the things that typically guys tend to do is what? They go to the gym. And then do what? They work on pump up their muscles. There's nothing wrong with it if you're doing it for exercise. I mean, there's nothing wrong with anything anyway. If you want to make yourself look big, then make yourself look big. There's nothing particularly wrong about it. What I'm saying is there's something wrong about the way minds think. This is what we're talking about, minds. We don't really care about the bodies at all. Actually, this is not a talk about the body. This is a talk about how the mind sees the body. That's where the problem is. Because I'm not an expert on the body. All I know is this is just energy. And the differences that you see are differences in the configuration of energy. That's all. That's all I know about the body. I didn't study medicine. I know very little about the physiology. Enough to keep me alive, that's enough for me. When I'm ill, doctors look after me. And they earn merits out of it. So I'm talking about the mind. That is my speciality. That is what I have mastered, the mind. So this is about not the body, but the way that the mind sees the body. So if you are someone, or if you know someone, Buddha knows someone, if you are someone who takes himself or herself, now it's got to be, I think we see both, to the gym, and if your intention is to pump yourself up, again, there's nothing wrong. If you're doing it for exercise, great, because we all need exercise. Right? Otherwise, your arteries start getting clogged up. Right? Blood pressure and glucose and cholesterol and all that takes over, and you have what could be a good, healthy, long life is ruined for lack of exercise. So you need that. But if you're doing it and you go looking in the mirror to see how pumped up you are, and then you have compare with each other, this is things that we've seen happen in gymnasiums. And then you have competitions as well, where people show off. Again, forgive me for saying all of this and any of this. None of this is to hurt, none of this is to offend. But please don't be so, please don't be offended if you are someone who either enjoy doing this or, you know, you advocate this kind of entertainment or this kind of hobby. But it's my task, my duty to show you if your way of thinking is wrong, then I've got to help you with that. Now, I have seen personally, when I was a lay person, there were people who were small in size, who a lot of them used to do much of this. It was typically that people who were smaller in size, they used to spend a lot more time in the gymnasium because they wanted to build their bodies up because they always felt that they were small. Mentally, they felt that they were small, and therefore whenever they compared themselves with each other, they felt undermined. This was self-deprecation. No one said anything to them. No one mocked them, ridiculed them. Even if they did, you can't insult me unless I let you, right? Your insults simply fall at my feet unless I accept them and take them personally. So these individuals, they were pretty hurt by the fact that God had not been kind to them. Nature had not been kind to them. So they were born small, and therefore they felt that they had to do something to make themselves look bigger. So where's the problem here? The problem is, again, identifying yourself with size. Right, now let's turn to the women. You don't care much about looking big. Your objective is looking tall. You like to look tall. So, what you could quite comfortably and easily do, like this, you try and do like this. Cue stilettos. High heels. Is there anyone in this room who's going to be brave enough to put their hand up and say, no, Swamiji, so high heels are the most comfortable thing in the world. Because you know it is not true. You can't come here and lie. You know it's not true. Then why high heels? Because it gives you a height that you were not born with. It makes you look taller than you are. Once again, this is the price that you have to pay for identifying yourself with this body. When you become the body, ladies and gentlemen, you are in all sorts of problems. Do you like to look fat and plump, or do you like to look thin and slim? Typically, 9 times out of 10, what do you see on the adverts? What do they promote? Slim. So most young girls want to look slim. There might be certain parts of them they want to look. Again, influenced by drishti. Influenced by drishti. Some things I'm not going to spell out, but you're intelligent enough to understand what I mean. You know, we can laugh about it, but you also have to take the serious message that I'm giving out here. It's okay, let's enjoy what we're here to do, but you've got to take the serious message that there's an undertone, a very serious and profound message. Please walk away with that. This is taking over our people, our youth, like a tsunami. Here are some things that women want to look. I'm not stereotyping, but this is very, very common in this day and age. Some of the things that women want to look: slim. You tell me whether this is a mental characteristic or a physical characteristic. Being slim. Mental or physical? Physical. Fair. Mental or physical?
Physical.
Tall? Physical. How much do girls spend on this kind of stuff? Walk into your daughter's dressing room, or walk into your dressing room, and look at all the products that you have on the... I can hear the men laughing. You will have a nice conversation when you get back home today. So, when you get back home, right, go to your daughter's dressing room. If you don't have a daughter, go to your dressing room. Have a look at the stuff that she has on her thing. How many products might you find that promise a fairer skin, fairer complexion? What is fair, physical or mental? Physical. What's the problem with being dark? What's the issue? If anything, dark people have something the fair people don't have. They've got melanin, which is nature's natural protective coating to keep you safe from your radiation. That's the stuff that they don't have. That's not taking anything away from fair-skinned people, but what I'm saying is the minds suffer. That's terrible. It's a big thing in this part of the world, certainly. Because when westernization takes over, globalization takes over, then they always keep promoting, this is the ideal. Look. So many young people spend time they don't have and money they don't have on a body that is not theirs, frankly. Right? Doing it up, not realizing perhaps that no matter how much you do it up, it will always perish. How much have you spent by this point on all these products? You just ask yourself, make a mental note of it. Right? On those creams, these creams, that powders and this talcum and this soap and that thing and whatever, moisturizers. Moisturizers are okay, let's say, but the stuff that actually promised to make you look fair, why was it ever a problem to you that you were not fair? You know, you were not born with this deficiency or this insufficiency. You were not born with that, this feeling of inadequateness. It's something you acquired. This, you know, this is something they don't have in some parts of the world where everyone's like that. Everyone's dark, so they have no problem. But you see this typically in a part of the world where you see both fairer and darker. And then there comes a competition. So if you ask me to come and talk to a group of girls or people who are in this kind of problem, my talk is not going to anchor around, you know, let's all understand that under the skin we are all the same, right? Fair is as good as dark, dark is as good as fair. That's not what I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to be saying what I'm sharing with you right now. You are not the body. You are not the body. So give up this nonsense. Why is it that the size, your size gives you a feeling that you are that big? Why does your complexion give you a feeling that you are fair or you are dark? And then as a result of that, the stories that you narrate to yourself, if only I was fairer, things would have been better. Why have you wasted so many hours of your life, not time, but life, sitting in front of the mirror, trying to do yourself up? And like I said, slim around the waist, but I won't say the rest. Why? I mean, if you're physically healthy, right? If the doctor does the checkups and say, you know, your blood profile is fine, your this is fine, your that is fine, your all of that is fine, and you can live a good, healthy, long life. The only reason why you say, too small, can I get an operation done? Maybe to enlarge myself? This might sound like just a joke to you, but for to a huge population, a growing population of people in this world, it is becoming mainstream. There's going to come a point, ladies and gentlemen, where we're going to have more cosmetic surgeries. They will be more in demand than actually surgeries done to heal patients. You know, some people, they fly to other parts of the world because in some parts of the world they don't do cosmetic surgery. And then they get on a flight and they fly themselves there, all of that, and the risk that they have to put themselves under. Typically, doctors try and avoid operations whenever they can for risk of infection, right? But even when all of that is explained, still, there's a mental vexation that says, no, but I want to look this way, I want to look that, I want to look like her, see, in the magazine. I can't stop the fanfare, I can't stop the social media, I can't stop all that on your behalf. People will carry on doing these things, saying these things. There will be forums and boards and websites on the internet that will always go on talking about how this is the ideal size, weight, height, width, breadth, all of that. Vital stats. There will always be that information out there and it will just keep growing. That cannot be curtailed. So the only solution then, ladies and gentlemen, is to understand that you are not the body. Come out of that thinking if you are still there. Let not your height decide or determine how you feel about yourself. Let not your complexion determine how you feel about yourself. Let not the size of your body determine how you feel about yourself. I mean, what are the animals? In the forest, jungle, yes, survival of the fittest. Okay, so to be the alpha male, you've got to have the biggest set of, what do you call them? Horns, yes, you've got to have the biggest set of horns. You've got to be the tallest, you've got to be the biggest, right? So, because there's a survival struggle there. And so the offspring have to be of that sort. So the female always picks the one that is strongest of the pack. Is that the same among you humans? I don't want to be a human then. Are our minds so small? Are our minds so small that we identify ourselves by the size of our bodies? Actually, not our bodies, but just a collection of stuff. It's time we come out of that. So if I say, in your next life you're going to be a dwarf, you've got to be okay with that. That's the challenge. That's the challenge I'm setting for you here, here and now. Can you be okay with that? It's a difficult one. Or what if you are unusually tall? You might end up on the Guinness Book of World Records, but that's about it. After that, you'll walk around feeling you're weird. You feel pretty awkward when you're in a social gathering of some sort, and you don't feel right about it. What if you had really big feet? Really big feet, size 12s, 15s. No, because the ideal size is slender, slim. See? If you had big feet, then you will always be watching out whether people are looking at your feet. What if some of your toes were shorter than what they're supposed to be? What if some of your toes were missing? You only had four, where you should have had a fifth. Are you going to live your life feeling inadequate? What if you were born with a sixth finger? Like some people are. Just imagine if you were in that position. You were born with a sixth finger. Chances are you might go to a doctor and say, is there some way I can have that removed? Because I don't like the way I look. You don't like the way who looks? I look. Where's that I? See? This? When are we going to come out of that? This is unnecessary suffering. If you can get the gist of what I'm saying, if you can understand the wisdom which I wish to convey to you, ladies and gentlemen, you must be happy to be born whatever. You know, as long as you can think, as long as you have the ability of insight, the capacity to analyze, the capacity to think and act, take the right decision, the capacity to practice the Dhamma, practice the path, that is all you need to exit samsara. Your size doesn't matter. Now as you grow older, your hair is going to start to go a funny color, isn't it? It's not the right color, it's the wrong color, isn't it? So then what do you do? What do most people do? Not all people, but most people, what do they do? They wish they die, but they don't die. What they do? They dye their hair, yes. Color their hair. Once again, like I said at the beginning, I repeat this. This is not meant to offend, insult, hurt, or any of this. Okay, so please don't be. Actually, no, next week we can just have a small class, I think. Most people might not show up next week. You must allow me to speak freely. Expect only one thing from me and nothing more than that. That I will not intentionally hurt you. Don't expect anything else from me. That you can expect. Expect that I shall not intentionally hurt you. Don't expect anything else from me. The rest of it, leave it to nature. Leave it to the universe. I don't come here with an agenda. I don't plan what I'm going to say to you. I don't have a script that I practice over the next week, so I come prepared for Sunday. No. So, you know, this has been here for like the last 2 or 3 months or something. Because there's something I want to explain to you using these bricks. So this never came up. That's what I mean. These are not pre-prepared, pre-planned speeches. It would not feel right if I did it that way. It would also feel very artificial. We would not resonate the way that we do if I did like that. All I do is I expect one thing from you, just as you expect one thing from me, which is, what is the only thing you are allowed to expect from me? I shall not intentionally hurt you. Don't expect anything else. What I expect from you is, you will engage in meritorious deeds and bring currency. You got to come with a full heart. I don't care about your pockets. Come with a full heart. A heart full of merits. I will work on my wisdom. With my teacher's guidance and the association of the Mahasangha, they will work on my wisdom. They will give me the Dhamma that I need. I will practice that. All of that is for me to do. That is not for your sake. That I do for my sake. I don't practice the path of the monastery so that I can give a good sermon the following week. Yuck. What, I'm in showbiz? No. This is not a performance. This is just me being myself. I'm just being myself. And I hope you're okay with that. Because I'm not going to change. I'm just going to be myself. I'm sick and tired of being a fake. That's what I always had to do in my life. Pretend to be someone I wasn't. Because that's what made people happy. I was a crowd pleaser. I speak about myself, you think about yours. Crowd pleasing. If you can please them, if you can give them joy and then guide them towards Nibbana, that's one thing. But to please you so that you give me what I want, no, not going to do that. Because there's nothing I want from you. You are free to give what you want to give. That is because you want to give. Because if you didn't want to give, that giving means nothing to you. Does it? Whatever you give only gets you good. Only if you want to give it. If I took something that belonged to you without your consent, how much merit does that earn for you? I took something that belonged to you without your consent. How much merit does that earn you? Nothing. So it only earns you merit if you give because you want to give. I explained to you how that works. How when you want to give and you give what you can give, that earns you merits. So if you want merits, then do as it pleases you. Your merit, you cannot transfer to my account. Your merit is yours, my merit is mine. We can't merit share. There's no such model. So we can't do that. So my task is to explain to you how the universe works, how your minds work, how merit works, how demerit works, how what you do will come back to you, the consequences of your actions. So that is my task, is to explain that to you. And how do I know this stuff? Because I have learned it for my own sake, not for your sake. I hope that's okay with you. I didn't go to university to learn for you. I went to university to learn for myself. I go to the university of life, where I learn about this life. And what I learn, I come and share with you. Isn't that a fair deal? Actually, don't you prefer the fact that there's nothing I want from you? Is it not good that way? For yourselves? Just imagine if I came here wanting something that you had, what would you have to do? Leave that at home before you come in. When you walk out on the streets, do you wear all your jewelry? And look fancy? Why not? Because you know there may be burglars, robbers, right? Thieves. You know that there are people who have what you want. So what do? You either leave them at home or you cover yourself up. You don't put them on show, right? So the same way, the same thing applies here. If you think that there's something I want from you, please don't bring it here. Leave it at home. Leave it at home. Don't bring it. When you come here, you must know that I have come for nothing else than to share with you what I have understood, because you come here wanting to learn that. And I feel that's a very healthy relationship, because you get without expectation. You can come here fearless, without worry, without fear that at the end of this sermon or at the end of so many sermons he's going to come around asking, Nona. We don't do that. I cannot be a hypocrite. I can be anything else, just not a hypocrite. So, come back to the body. So there's a lot of cosmetic surgery going on out there. I know very little about this stuff because my world is now very isolated from all of that that goes on outside. Sometimes I bump into people and people ask me, like when recently I visited India for a couple of days, and the Indians were telling me about stuff that was happening in Sri Lanka. I was like, what, really? I didn't know that it was going on in my hometown. So I don't keep up to date with the news, what's going on out there. It's simply because it's not of interest to me. I have enough and more things to take in a day's, within the day, enough of goodness to appreciate, enough goodness to think about, enough hearts to heal and people to help and compassion to spread. I don't consume my time reading up about how people waste their time. But if you live out there, you've got to know these things, at least to some extent. So I can't say drop your newspapers, turn off the news. You would not be prudent. But only consume what you have to, what you absolutely have to. Right? If you need to just get the day's news, and if it, as it relates to you, maybe, you know, if you can watch a summary of what happened in the day, if that's enough, then that's enough. Some people binge watch the news. I had an uncle who used to do that. He would sit in front of his TV and one channel after the other, he would watch the same news item but in different channels. And then he would compare them and say, you know, they are a bit leftist. These guys are rightist. And these people are democratic. I had an uncle who used to do that. And I thought, you know, what a waste of time. So what? Okay, now you come to the conclusion that these are leftists, these are rightists, and these are democratics. Okay, now what? Okay, so? Have you become wiser? Have you become richer? Only the one thing's happened. You've learned something useless and you've grown older. I'm not saying you mustn't know and find out what's going on out there, but just use what is enough for your survival. Just learn what's enough for your survival, because there are far more important things for you to learn. Understand how your minds work. Not people who have not understood that do. Let's not waste our time on that. If you still get angry, ladies and gentlemen, that's the first thing you need to try and figure out. Why do I get angry? Why do I feel disappointment? Why do I feel lustful? And your heart starts beating and you start sweating and you can't control yourself after that. And then you have to find somewhere where you can lock yourself in isolation, because whatever, Why? Where's the peace? Where's your tranquility? Where's your serenity? If all of that is lost, then what's the point? If there's something in the fridge and you can't let it be, there's a problem. Where's your peace? So these are the problems that we have to try and solve in the life that we have. Remember, if you don't finish these things off, you will always come back for unfinished business. No business can be left unfinished. You will have to return to finish your business. I made that mistake in my last life. I came back for unfinished business and I'm still trying to finish that business. That is why I'm here again. And if I don't do what I have to do for myself, I will have to come back again. And then I'll bump into you lot again. And then you'll have to listen to the same voice and the same things again. Don't you dread that? So, whenever you identify yourself with your body, you know, it'll happen. Okay, just because I give you this lecture doesn't mean it's going to happen soon after the end of this sermon. It will still happen, but at least come to awareness that what is happening inside you is wrong. Because unless you know that something's wrong, you're not going to fix it. Why would you? If your daughter, your son, whoever, they are so concerned about their bodies and they want to do something with their bodies, right? There might not be much point in trying to explain to them that, what's the point with that? Don't do this to her. What's the point with her? Because, you know, you can only talk to them for so many years. After that, they become independent. That's the word that parents hate to hear, but they do at some point, right? Mom, I am a grown-up and I am independent. Right? But all parents have to hear this one day or the other. Just as much as your parents did from you, one day or the other. But this is something parents dread. When they decide that they can make their own decisions, and at that point, your opinion is just an opinion. It's not their decision. Until then, you make their decisions on their behalf. There comes a point in their lives where your decisions are no longer decisions. It's just an opinion. Just another opinion. It's just one other thing that they might choose to consider. That's also not mandatory. It's not mandatory they consider your opinion. It's just another opinion. When your kids are grown up, you tell them, go and ask Tati what he thinks about this. Why? Why should I? I asked my friends, they said this, I checked on the internet and it said that. I asked Gemini and the AI said this. And so I've got all my information checked up, so why should I go and ask my father? He's old anyway. What does the old man know? He's not abreast with the, you know, ages and he doesn't know what's going on out there. So this is the day that most parents dread. The day when they decide, we've got wings strong enough, now we can fly out of the nest. You can't stop that from happening. Besides, you can't live forever anyway, parents. So whether they choose to leave you or you choose to leave them, that's going to happen. All you can do is equip them with everything they need for the day that they become independent. Equip them with that. That is why I have a lot of respect for parents who at least try to bring their children here. At least try. I know sometimes you will not be successful. Because yours is now just an opinion. That's why it has become that. See? When they were younger, you could have said, hey, Sunday with me, in the car, now. Okay. And they would have jumped in the car and you would have come here and either here or with the other Swami Nuanse, and that would be the end of the matter. But there comes a point where, and it might have already in your families, where yours is just an opinion. Because yours is now just an opinion, okay, let's see what you have to say about it, is what your parents, your children would tell you. I will consider it. Like when you write those official letters, for your kind consideration. So now, it might have come to a point in your families where you say things to your children for their kind consideration. Ah, well done. Well done, parents. Well done. You have done parenting very well. You have done parenting very well. Now you have to say things to them for their kind consideration. All those years, eh? Labor, toil, blood to milk, and all that. Sweating about it, fretting about it, sleepless nights. Days and nights spent in hunger, without sleep. All of that done on their behalf. And now, yours is just an opinion. See? And yours is just an opinion, just as much your neighbor's opinion. They're now on an equal platform. What your child hears on the news, by the news reporter, what your child hears from her friends at school, and what you have to say are now equal. They're considered equally. Although you're the one who put in blood, sweat and tears to bring her up. You have brought them up so well that yours is now just an opinion. And now it's come to a point where you're helpless. So that's why I say, for parents who are still able to at least talk to their children and bring them here, you have done well. You have done well. You've got to be proud of yourselves. And for the children who are humble enough to listen to their parents still, even when you have come to an age where you can make those decisions independently, because the law says that you can, society says that you can, for those children who are still humble enough, actually it's not just a symbol or a sign of your humbleness and humility, it's a sign of your wisdom. It is a sign that you have not just taken knowledge, but you have also grown in wisdom. Knowledge you can take from any book. But wisdom you have to cultivate within. See, if someone says kill, that is knowledge. Someone says don't kill, that's also knowledge. Which one's good for you? To be able to make that decision requires wisdom. Someone says take it, have it. Someone says no, don't take it, don't have it. They're both pieces of knowledge. You can get both of these on the internet. Do you know there are forums that are pro-suicide? There are forums on the internet. You can go and get advice on how to commit suicide. All you have to do is just like explain the situation that you're in, like who else you're living with. I'm with my, you know, my mom's here, my dad's here. I've got three sisters and I've got an uncle who lives at home, right? So it's quite complicated. It's not going to be easy for me to do this, right? But this is what we have at home. I've got three bedrooms, right? There's a fan in every room, right? We have a well on this side. So you kind of have to explain the situation. And what they do is they take all of that into consideration and they give you a proposal. Nice, isn't it? And you know what's best? It's for free. In a world in which they charge you for everything, that advice is for free though. Parents, if you don't know where to find this stuff, ask your children, they'll tell you. Hint, hint. There are forums in which you can take pictures of parts of your bodies and post online and ask for comments. Oh, and by the way, you've got to prove that you are genuine. So you have to have like your signature, your handle or something, your online profile, some detail about it. You've got to post it with it, and then they look at that, and then people give you their comments about it. Too big, too small, too long, too short. And it's not just there, people are using it. I don't know whether you know it or not, maybe your son has a profile on that forum. Don't take this lightly, ladies and gentlemen. Please don't take this lightly for your sake and your children's sake. I wouldn't be talking about this stuff if it really didn't matter. You know, really, this doesn't matter. None of what I'm saying right now is of any use to me. Is there? None of what I'm saying right now is of any use to me. If I spoke to you about anicca dukkha anatta, that would be of some use to me. I have to be mindful to contemplate the Dhamma as I speak, something that is of no use to me right now. So I've got to do two things right now. I've got to talk to you about something worldly, while in my mind I've got to contemplate. Otherwise this time would be of no use to me. So I'll worry about that. But you've got to think about why it is Swaminarayan is taking this time to share with you something that is really picking up with pace. It's growing in epidemic proportions. And those forums, they get so many visits. Young people. The youngest. The other day I saw someone only 12 years of age. You got to click on a button to say that I'm over 18. Any monkey can do that. Right? So what, they check you to make sure that you're over 18? No, you just got to press a button to say, yes, I'm over 18. And then they ask you for a birthday. You just have to work out 18 years back from today. That's not rocket science, is it? You just work out a date 18 years back from today and put that. And this click, yes, I'm over 18. The ISPs are doing what they can to try and block some of these websites, but there are many ways to circumnavigate. Many. There are some parts of the web that cannot be moderated. It just cannot be moderated. It just cannot. It's the wild, wild west. The wild, wild web. But what I'm saying is your children are on these forums. If not today, they will be tomorrow. Unless you equip them with the Dhamma, unless you tell them and teach them, ladies and gentlemen, that it is wrong to identify themselves with their bodies. They live thinking they're inadequate. So as parents, you've got to be really mindful about the things you say in their presence. You know, if at the dining table you discuss while your children are there about some girl you saw, or some boy you saw, or some family friends or something, right? After that you have a discussion. This is mother and father just having a casual chat, and the daughter's there on the side. So, you know, she's very pretty, isn't she? About some distant cousin or relation or someone. Right? Some daughter in extended family. She's quite pretty, isn't she? Yeah, she's fair and all that, isn't she? Sudhui. Your daughter's listening to that. Now who's done the indoctrination? Parents. If you're not careful about what you say in their presence, sometimes the best thing to do is just keep shut. Don't say anything. As Guru Handra says, open your mouth only to eat your food and then close your mouth very quickly. It's one of the safest ways in which to use your mouths. But if you say that in their presence, they're now indoctrinated. So now the next thing they would do is go into their bedrooms and, how do I look fair? Because now what's in the back of their mind is, what does Ami think about me? Does Ami think that I'm not fair enough? She's never said that I'm pretty. But now she's saying that that girl was pretty, that Akki is prettier than me because she's fairer than me. Then I have to start doing whatever that Akki does. Maybe Akki was just born that way. But now she feels that to come up to that level, I mean, she's in a different league now. You put her there. So now to come up to that level, she has to do something about it. This is why we don't let our children at the monastery loose on the internet. There's nothing inherently wrong with the internet if you know how to use it. Because there are good guys and there are bad guys on the internet. You can go looking for whatever you want. The same goes for books, magazines. You don't actually have to find yourself on the internet for that. Newspapers, anything that can indoctrinate you. You know, just take a stroll around Colombo. And, you know, urban areas, and you see these billboards, like these advertising boards. Like 9 out of 10 of them will somehow glorify some part of the physical body as they try and market some other product that they want to sell. If it's a shampoo, you know, can you find one advert where there's a shampoo being advertised and then there's a dark girl in the picture? I know that in some parts of the world they're trying to do that because they want to make it look, you know, it's all, you know, because they realize that they're giving off the wrong message. And so now they're proactively trying to do something about it. But they're trying to do that because the problem is already there, isn't it? So the problem is already there. That itself is an acceptance that there's a problem at hand. I mean, you know, I could give you 100 examples, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know how much of it, how much of what I have to say I can say on camera. Maybe some of this might have to get edited out. That's the beauty of being present here. See, if you're a woman, you're not supposed to have body hair, right? Like your arms and your legs, and they're all supposed to be hairless, aren't they? Yeah. Where do you learn that from? Not from Sunday morning. Where do you learn that from? Those boards. Because what they want to sell is a tire. They want to sell tires. So on the tire sat a girl with her long legs. And they're supposed to be long legs as well. Short legs won't work. They've got to be long legs. So your children, they're looking at them. They're, okay, so that is the idol. That is what I should look like. That is the picture of perfection. Then they look at themselves. I'm far from being perfect. So then I've got to get to work. Then they go to the shop and then buy those products. Or they go to the salons and they say, can you strip this? Can you strap that? Can you take this off? Can you take that off? Everything that God gave. Everything that God gave. And said, and God said, my child, you are perfect the way you are. Here. Here's everything you need. Put God to your side. That's the DNA that your mother and father gave you. Because that's what you needed. And now, you got to change all that. Because now you have a symbol of perfection. That's the idol that now you have to try and imitate. So you put yourself through that. You know, these things start very small, but then they grow like a cancer. They start very small. At the beginning, they didn't have much of this. If you go back a few decades, they didn't have much of this. At the beginning, they just had maybe, you know, they would do something with their lips to make them look, what, plump? No. You've got to help me with the terminology, okay? Now you might do your eyebrows to make them look thin, thin. Thin. And then eyelashes to make them look longer. And the hair, silky. Yeah, that's the way it's got to look. So then they bring out these products. You know, one product after the other, after the other, after the other. You know, at the end of it, you're all just consumers. So what have you done all your life? Consumed. That is what life is. Humans are there to consume. That's what humans are born for. So that people can just keep on throwing products at you and you can just keep on consuming them and then you go to work. So you can earn the money to go and fill their pockets with that so that you can buy their products and then consume them. You know who pays for the advertising? So that they can get those messages into your head? Who pays for that? You. So you pay them to advertise the product to you, then they get become indoctrinated, then you go pay them again to buy the product and then use it. See? Who's digging their own grave? Need I say more? I'm giving you examples of what happens when you identify yourself with your bodies, ladies and gentlemen. Now in some parts of the world, you know, where they don't get much sun, people go out sunbathing. This is not my to say it's right or wrong, I'm just saying it's a tradition in some parts of the world. But then, when you're out there sunbathing in your swimsuits or whatever, there's a certain way that you have to look. Because now you're in the public eye. So there are products for that as well. What are you? Just consumers. So that's what we've done all our lives. Sat down in front of the TV, watched all those adverts. You only wanted to watch the teledrama, but you have more adverts than teledramas to watch. In fact, you're the teledrama. Remember, if anything is given to you for free, you're the product that's being sold. Don't forget that. So when they show you those teledramas for free, and then they have to put those adverts in between, then you're the product that's being sold. Understand that and live. Not suggesting switch off your television. I suggested that a long time ago. So I'm not suggesting it now. But what I'm saying is, if you allow yourself to be victimized like this, you will have lost the purpose of your life, ladies and gentlemen. Life will come and go. Only the actions of your foolishness will remain. and the consequences of those foolish actions. There will come a day where you will regret all of this. Because there will come a day, no matter how much you fight, right, now your bodies have started giving up. Then, not all the anti-wrinkling creams, what do you call it? Is that what they call it? Anti? Anti. Anti? Anti-aging, thank you. Anti-aging creams, right? No matter what you do, you won't be able to fight them. So you can keep, you can keep fighting, but you know you're not going to win. It's a useless struggle. This is the point I'm trying to get across to you. If you're fighting a battle that you cannot win, might as well realize that now and use that time to fight a battle that you can actually win, right? This trying to look good battle, you can't win, ladies and gentlemen. You can't win it. I know young girls who save their pocket money, given to them to go to school and get some lunch. They save that pocket money up so that they can go to the salon later on in the weekend. They will fast. They won't eat. They'll bear hunger and do harm to their bodies in doing so to save that money to go to the salon in the weekend. Sometimes they'll do that for weeks and save enough to do something even more intensive than that. Maybe go under the knife. You know, sometimes by the point children come and talk to their parents and say, I want this done, they will have already saved up for that. Because they know that one of the first obstacles that's going to be is, parents will say, we can't even afford something like that. Don't worry, I saved up for it. And then there are others who add fuel to this fire. Those are those boyfriends. I say boyfriends, it can happen the other way around as well. Right? But usually, typically, it is the boyfriends. You know, just one word is enough to completely take away their peace of mind. Actually, you don't even need words, you just have to look at someone. Say you look at a girl who is of different proportions to your girlfriend and she asks you, why were you looking at her? Ah, just. Just. What do you mean, just? You know, I wish. What do you wish? No, it's okay, you know, I don't want to hurt your feelings or anything. No, you have to tell me, what is it? See? Because there's a feeling of inferiority, acceptance, lack of acceptance. She feels that she's not recognized. People who go looking for love are people who don't feel complete inside. That is why I always tell you, ladies and gentlemen, give your children the Dhamma, otherwise they will fall into this trap. Your daughters will fall into this trap because they love a bit of recognition. They just love a bit of acceptance. Every heart aches for it. Acceptance, recognition, respect, love. Hearts weep for this stuff because they don't have a source of love and affection and compassion within themselves because they don't feel complete. So they have to go looking for it. And when they go looking for it, they might look for it in the worst of places. And so when a guy says, you're pretty, they take that as gospel truth. Maybe that at home they don't have their parents much with them because they're out working. So there's no one to talk, spend time with, appreciate them. Maybe they work hard at school, but there's no one to appreciate their grades, whatever. They're good. They do work at home, they help out in the kitchen, but there's no one to appreciate them because parents are far too busy. The father's on his iPad, the mother's reading, talking to her friends or whatever. There's no connection at home. It's just for convenience people live under one roof. Just for convenience. So that you can share the bills now. It's a house share. That's what it is. It's come into that point where people get married for two reasons. One, to satisfy their sensual desires. Two, to share the bills. Don't wait until it's too late. It's easy for that to happen, especially if you're educated. Education is a blessing if you use it correctly. But if you're educated, you get more opportunities. And the more opportunities you get, the fewer opportunities you get to be with people you care about. The more educated you are, the more opportunities you get to spend time with people who want to get things from you. And the fewer opportunities you get to be with the people who actually care about you. Go back a few decades, our mothers weren't that educated. They weren't worldly educated, they were life educated. But they didn't understand economics, they didn't understand strategy, they didn't understand business, they didn't understand finance, they didn't understand the law, they didn't understand medicine, they didn't understand these things, but they understood how to be at home and how to look after the family. Now don't pick up your AK-47s, point them at me and go, "Oh, Swami Mahansa, equal, equal, equal." Yeah, we can keep saying equal this, equal that, bring women on the same platform and all that. You know, they were equal anyway to begin with. Just because the man wears a pair of pants and the woman doesn't, is in your mind, is that what inequality is? So must they also wear pants and now they're equals? Is that what equality is? How about the fact that the mother at home gave love and affection and looked after the children? She had an equal share at home. Once again, I really hope I'm not offending anyone by saying these things. Especially the female folk. I'm not retro. I'm not saying, you know, you are all doomed and what have you done. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying think open-mindedly. You know what the banner says, right? This is for open-minded people. This is where society pushed you. Some of these choices weren't yours to make anyway. Society pushed you there. So how come we live in a society where more women go out to work, but more people do drugs, more children do drugs? More children are addicted to pornography. Children are addicted to all sorts of things that completely ruin and destroy their futures. Because they don't have the mother at home. That's what's happened. Back in those days, although the father went out, the mother was still at home. So soon after they came back home from school, the mother was there to talk to them because she had time. Now mothers don't have time. That's what I'm talking about. She doesn't have the time to do that. Because she's also doing her working out. She's also out there doing night shifts and long shifts and weekend shifts. Like I said, the only time they find now to be with each other is the time when they want to scratch their backs. That's a metaphor for something else. You work out what that is. Just to satisfy their sensualities. Be that sight, sound, smell, taste or touch. Where's the spiritual connection at home? That's gone. Now it's business at home. Now it's very transactional. Even parents have become hypocritical now. You'll often find the father saying bad things about the mother saying bad things about the father to their children. Because it's now about, I don't want me to be the bad one. I have to be the good one. Because now there's a fight, husband, wife, mother, father, there's a fight now. There's a cold war, a silent war. What is going on? So do we all stop our jobs and go back to those times? I don't know that. I don't have the answer to that. All I can tell you is what's going on in your lives and why your children are now straying off the righteous path. Well, at least one of the parents have to be with the children, so that when they get back home, they can share their deepest, darkest secrets. What happened at school is very important to find out. Just as much as what they learned at school, they also need to find out what happened at school. There are two different things, ladies and gentlemen. They're very different things. What they learned at school, the examinations, they will give you the results, and then you can find out. But what actually happened at school, that's a different thing. Now, where's the time for parents to read their children's body language? They don't say, you just have to observe them. But that observation is not just a quick glance. You've got to observe them. Today, parents aren't familiar enough with their children's behaviors that they wouldn't spot even the most obvious difference in their change in their behaviors. They wouldn't spot it. How could they? Because they don't observe them. These are things you'll have to pay the price for much later down the line. But then it'll be too late to rectify them. All that will happen then is regret. That's all you can do. Repent and be remorseful. But what's the point? The horse has already bolted. It's time to take action. Please don't take this lightly. This is not a small problem. Where's the spiritual connection at home? Spiritual doesn't mean you must both sit down and do meditation or something. That's not what I mean by spiritual connection. Spirituality is the search for meaning. That's what spirituality is. The search for purpose. We are all born with that. We all look for a deeper meaning behind what we do. But we fail to find it because we look in all the wrong places. So you can be spiritual at work, you can be spiritual at home. You don't have to be at the temple to be spiritual. You might have to be at the temple to be religious. I'm talking about spirituality. Actually, we have far more people who are religious today than people who are spiritual. Many people are religious, at least claim to be. But if you look at their spirituality, next to none. Find that spirituality at home, which is where you spend most of your life. It might be difficult to find it at the workplace, but do try. Look for meaning, look for purpose, look for connection. Connect to the universe. As Guru Angad always says, learn the Dhamma, but study life. In your study of life, you will find spirituality. The Buddha comes into this world to give us his teachings, ladies and gentlemen, so that we can apply them in life, in our daily lives, in which we will find spirituality. So if it's not there in your relationship at home, do something about it. Add an element of spirituality into your family lives. Once again, I don't mean you have to go to the temple every day or observe the precepts or sit down for meditation. That's not what I mean. It's not necessarily what I mean. It's taking the time to talk with each other. It's taking the time to actually really observe what your children are doing. Giving them that freedom, clearing up the air so that they can speak to you. If your child has to book appointments to talk to you, then that's not home, that's an office, isn't it? So actually, I don't know, maybe in today's day and age, children send Outlook calendar invites to the parents to say, can I have an appointment to speak with you about this matter, that matter, and that matter? In the same household, are you actually communicating on WhatsApp now? Don't answer that question. Please don't. I'm just asking the question to get you to think. Mother's in the kitchen, father's in the living room, child's in the bedroom, and they're WhatsApping each other because now they have a group. If it has begun to happen in your families, ladies and gentlemen, do something about it before it's too late. That is not how we build connections. That may be how we build networks. That's why those events are called networking events. That's how we build networks, but that's not how we build connection. You cannot foster spirituality on WhatsApp. That's not WhatsApp's fault. It was never designed to build spirituality. It was designed to help build networks. We have become a generation who have so many friends on count, but hardly any friend you can count on. That's what happens when you build networks but not connections. So use WhatsApp, but try and not bring it into your home. Try. That's all I can say. I can say try. I'm not going to check. I can only suggest. Try not to bring WhatsApp into your home. If your parents are at work and you're at home and you have to send a message, that's another matter. But once you walk in through the front door, right? End of WhatsApp. End of chat on these electronic platforms. From there on, all communications have to happen face to face. Give them that opportunity to study the unsaid, to hear the unsaid, that body language. Not everything can be expressed in words. Maybe they still don't have the courage to speak up. But if you observe them, you will notice something's changed. And if you pick up on those things early, you can treat them early. I warn you, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't take some action about this, in a few years' time down the line, you will come here with your children. And that day says, Swami, no answer. You told me back then. I ignored you. I didn't think it was going to become such big a problem. But now, I'm about to lose my child. They have become independent. And now what I say is just an opinion to them. At least, can you try and talk to them? If your advice has only become an opinion to them, then potentially mine has as well by that point. If they're starting to dress different, you've got to be able to pick up as parents. See, that's the thing. When we were younger, I never went shopping alone. I, even as a boy, never went shopping alone. I never bought my clothes alone. I went with my mother or with my father. And then I picked something and asked him, can I have it? He said, no, not suitable. Put it back. Nah. Then go the next one. This one, too expensive. Sometimes they could afford it. But they wanted me to live to learn within our own means. Just because they could afford things, they didn't mean they would buy it for me. But today, you give the card. You want to go shopping, Buddha? Here's my card. I get the bill at the end of the month. And even still, you're far too busy. So you have a secretary who checks your bank statements and then they settle the bills. You just have to pay one lump sum to one account, expenses account. You don't know what the breakdown is, how much went to feed your children's fashion addictions, how much went to feed their drug addictions, how much went to feed their alcohol addictions, party addictions. You don't know any of this. It's an expenses account, general expenses. Then your secretary looks after all that for you. Is this the life you want? Do you realize how much you have lost? Are you going to let it happen? And just allow it to happen and allow to continue this to happen? I don't know any of your stories. This is just me speaking freely. Maybe some of this might relate to you, maybe some of it won't. I don't know. But I'm talking to a collective experience here. So I don't know to whom this sermon is best fit. I don't know. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow, maybe someday. Maybe you have a sister to whom these words would be gold. Maybe you have a brother who's trying to really support a family and bring up their children. Maybe it is for them this sermon was done. I don't know. I came in here with this. Just try 1 week without WhatsApp at home. You don't have to make a lifelong decision. Just try 1 week. See whether the house burns down as a result of that. If it doesn't, try a second week. No, you can use WhatsApp, but not at home. Once you're at home, that's it. So first come to an agreement. No WhatsApp at home. So if you send me messages, I'm not going to reply. And I'm not going to read them either. Because now it's like, you know, as long as it's marked red, you feel like the message has now been communicated, right? That's it. That's enough. I'm not coming home tonight. Red. Okay. See, it's so simple now. You don't have to give the parent a chance to respond to it. Because it's red. Yeah, 2 blue ticks and you're done. You've done your duty, which is to pass the message. Your mother's now frantically running around how to make sure that you are safe and all that, and whether it's right for you to be staying back that late. She's talking to your father, right? All of that is going on. But now you just pass a message. Now you say, put the phone to the side and party. Because the message is read. But when you communicate face to face, you can't walk away after it's heard. Yeah, you say, mother, I'm going to stay out tonight, okay? And you walk away. Come back here. Say that again. And she will ask you to spell it out syllable by syllable. Who did you ask before you made that decision? She will ask you. So now you have a conversation. Now you start spitting out all those stories that your friend said, go tell your mother this, go tell your mother that, and she will fall for it. But the mother knows her daughter. The mother knows her son. Because she's been there for him, she's been there for her throughout his or her life. Therefore, those excuses, they don't stick. Those alibis, they don't work. Because the mother knows best. Not anymore. Not anymore. I'm afraid not anymore. Now, mothers don't know what their daughters get up to. They only find out when they get a call from the doctor. Please come in. We have some news to give you. And then she rushes to the hospital. expecting to see her maybe in the accident, an emergency. And then she asked at the reception, "My daughter?" The doctor said, "I should come in." "Yeah, I looked in the accident emergency, she's not there." "No, she's in the maternity." "Go and talk to them there." "What? Ah, now you get the news." Today mothers don't know what their daughters get up to. Fathers don't know what their sons get up to. It seems that the only duty you had was to bring them into this world. You will thank me for this later. Even if today you might look at me so sharply and with piercing eyes, saying, "Don't talk to us like that. My children are good. They're saints, they're angels. What are you talking about?" Okay. Forgive me. Forgive me for sharing with you something today which is going to be true tomorrow. For their sake, for your sake, for your sanity sake. Wake up, open your eyes and do something about this, amen. I started with attachment to the body. And we started talking about all this. The attachment to the body is a big part of this problem, a huge part of this problem. Because they have various inadequacies, psychological, nothing physical. Physical, like I said, as long as the doctor says he or she can live up to 80, a full life, nothing wrong with them. Got both their lungs, got both their kidneys, got a full heart, there's no hole in it. Right? Everything's fine. Got the liver, got the spleen, got the bladder. Don't worry about it. The brain's fine. Blood report's fine. Go live. Right, these other physical differences to what is the accepted norm, doesn't matter, don't worry about it, just go live your life. That's what the doctor would say. So then you should be okay with that. But no, they cannot be okay with that. Because when they look at the billboards and they see those long legs, and there's not a strand of hair on it, now they feel that they have to do the same. I give you a challenge. Go try and find a board out there that's trying to sell more, advertise some product in which you see a dark girl, unless it's black and white. If you can spot one for every 10 you see, that's a lucky day by the lottery. It's a lucky day for you by the lottery. You might actually win the jackpot. All indoctrinations. What's the fix? Not to say that black is the same as white, and white is the same as black, and they're all equals. That's not the answer. Because you will say it once, but someone else will tell you 10 times that that is not the case. So you're 1 versus 10 from the outside world? Of course, you are not going to win. You've already lost. There's only one way you can fix that problem. Open their eyes to insight. Give them wisdom. Let them understand. Help them understand not to identify themselves with the body. That this is just matter. This is just energy. If you really love them, ladies and gentlemen, give them that wisdom. Otherwise, I have a lot of pity. I will sympathize with them for having been born children to you. Sorry for saying that out loud. But don't let me have to think that way. Don't let it be that way. I should have to be able to say, they are so fortunate to have been born children to you. That is what I should have to be able to say. And build those connections at home. Otherwise, siblings will start falling out with each other. It's becoming more and more like that nowadays. There'll come a point where that all they're interested in is how much of your property they get the share of. What share of your property they get. And then there'll be family wars, family feuds. Because you know that they're also going to get married to someone outside the family. So you might have two sons, right, who have a very strong bond with each other, but they're going to get married to two people outside of the family, and then they're going to start putting things into their heads. The same could happen the other way around. Sisters, brother and sister, two sisters, two brothers, whichever way. You're going to get influenced, they're going to be influenced by external forces. And then they're going to say, how come your brother got more than you did? Go talk to your mother. It's not right. Should be half and half, at least. Besides, we have a child, they don't. So surely, you know, they must understand that we have more expenses. So they should be giving us 75%, maybe giving your brothers 25%. But what's the deal? Go talk to her. If you want, I'll come with you. Isn't that the day you're going to regret giving their hand off in marriage to her? Like I said, again, for convenience. Marriage has just become an instrument just for convenience. It's just a construct for convenience now. Because the connection's gone, spirituality's gone. That's what it is, ladies and gentlemen. Bring back spirituality into your marriage. Spirituality has to be there everywhere. At the workplace, at home, on the playground. Where you see good sportsmanship, that is spirituality in action. An opponent falls. He can't get himself up. Even if it means a loss to your team, you go and help that man. That's spirituality in action on the sports field. But that will be gone if all you focus on is competition and my victory, my win at whatever loss. Then that's not the sports field. That's a breeding ground for the hells. Why send your children there then? See, today we do all these things for our children. We send them to school, we send them on sports, we send them to do music, dance, this, that, prefects, this club, that club, right? All these conveniences and all these things that they have to learn, the skills that they have to develop. But if you don't infuse spirituality into their hearts, if you don't give that, if you don't instill that in their hearts, then you're just making robots out of them. Not human beings. There will not be a representation of who you are in the future. They will simply be robots who know a lot of things, who have many skills, but they will have lost what it means to be human. Don't let that happen. You will regret. You will regret. And then it will be too late. The day where your kind, thoughtful advice is only an opinion, is the day you can start to regret. And regret in abundance. If you don't do what I'm asking you to do now, you will regret at leisure. Well, you've got to have something to do in your retirement, right? Once you retire, you've got to have something to do. So, why not regret? That'll keep you busy. Maybe that's why most old people find their way to the temples. Full of regret now. Full of regret. Deep hearts. Heavy minds and don't know what to do about it. So they go to the temple looking for refuge. But then it's too late. How many times do parents come and talk to us and say, Swami Nanda? You know, that's why we do a lot of counseling at the monastery. Those counseling sessions are always booked, fully booked. Always. Fully booked. Sometimes months ahead, they're fully booked. Some days we don't have enough monks and anagarika monks to go and sit down with them. That's how much people are suffering and up to this level, deep in their problems. Not knee deep, neck deep, and now nose deep in problems. They just don't know how to get out of them. And many of them pass their fruitful lives. Now all they can do is regret. And we try and explain things to them, but sometimes, you know, when they're too hurt on the inside, it's difficult to start healing them. When they're broken inside, like completely shattered, it's very difficult to put those pieces back together again. If those cracks start appearing, we can fix them. What's better is to galvanize it before it breaks. That's what we're trying to do with you. To galvanize before it breaks. Then it becomes unbreakable. But once it shatters, not the cracks I mean, once it shatters, incredibly difficult to put it back together again. Many parents come to us shattered. And they cry and they weep. And they say, Swaminathan, please help me, Swaminathan. I don't know where to turn to. I don't know who to go to. My son is his. I educated him. I sent him the best universities. My daughter, I sent her abroad for her studies. My this I sent here. My that I sent there. I saved up for them. And this much money I put in for them. This much property I gave for them. I did all I had to do. So she thinks by giving education, by giving property, by giving wealth, by giving connections, she's given all she has to do. What she hasn't given is spirituality. She hasn't given the one thing that sprung out of her heart. That was not given. To love someone dearly is not to give all the things that they want. To love someone dearly is to give them what they need. Sometimes they may not know what they need. You didn't know what you needed before you came to these sermons. You only knew what you wanted. You wanted a sermon. You came here. I gave you the sermon. But then you realized that's not what we wanted. What I needed was the truth. That's why you don't care much about what you have now. You care more about who you are now. But when you first came here, remember, you were someone when you came here. Now you're beginning to become no one. You all came here as someones. All of you. If we had listened to your thoughts would have said, hey, do you know who I am? Where's my seat? Is it not at the front? That's who walked in through those doors. Someones. But now you are beginning to realize that all these someones are fabrications of a foolish mind. A mind that has not seen wisdom. Then you begin to realize, gosh, what a fool I was. What someone. There is no one. Only an idiot thinks that there is someone. It's time to be humble. There you found humility. In the Buddha's words, you found humility. As those words came in through your ears and it started to make a change inside of you, that's where you found humility. You know this is true. You know this is true. Same thing happened with me. You walk into a room and say, don't you know me? I'm this person, I'm that person, don't you know me? So, you know, I can explain the anicca, dukkha and anatta to you, but if your house is on fire, what's the point of me giving you a lecture? Or giving you flying lessons? Your house is on fire. Start putting out those fires first. At least alongside this, start putting out those fires. Reinstate that connection that you must have at home. If you haven't found heart at home, you will not find it anywhere else. Rekindle those family relationships, for example. I don't mean go extend it, you know, now you don't have to just go to all your friends and make a list of them. And this is not that. It's not that. But I'm talking about the people who live under the same roof. One of the best things you can do is put that WhatsApp to a side. When you're walking through the door, WhatsApp to a side. Now, whatever you want to say, let's communicate face to face. That's one of the best things we can do. Simple, but very effective. Try it out and you'll see. Try it for 1 week if you can't promise yourself or commit to yourself forever. Just try it for a week. Like I said, if your house burns down after the end of the week because you couldn't WhatsApp. House is on fire. If your house is on fire, don't WhatsApp, scream. Then the others will know. Once again, nothing wrong with WhatsApp. Nothing wrong with WhatsApp. There's nothing wrong with the tool. The fault is always with the intention. So bring that spirituality back into your home. Start there. Then try and bring spirituality back into your workplace. If you are the one who leads your organization, you can do it quicker, better, more efficiently than most can. But even if you are part of a small team, if you are a member of two team or two-member team, bring some level of spirituality back into that. I can't prescribe what that has to be. It's down to you to work it out. If you, with your best friend, the person who you feel cares the most about you, besides your family, bring some element of spirituality. Where it's not just convenience that you expect out of that connection. Networks are for convenience. Connections is what I'm talking about. So, have a think about those things. Now, there's a lot for you to do. There's a lot you can do. First, you've got to think, right? So, on your way back home, the rest of the day, have a think about how you can incorporate an element of spirituality into your lives again. What has been lost over the years? What is the price you had to pay for that? Where are your children now? Take stock of that. I don't mean necessarily physically. Where are they? Spiritually. Are they lost? Are they bewildered? Are they destitute now? Then you might not be able to do anything overnight. But start planning. Have some ideas, have some thoughts. Discuss if your mother or father talk between the two of you. How can we bring a bit of spirituality back into our relationships? That is important, ladies and gentlemen. Our grandparents' grandparents had that. One or two generations down the line, it started disappearing. Two generations in the future, it'll be something from history. You will find it in museums. In two generations down the line. Don't you care about your children? What about your children's children? And their children? And their children? You may not live long enough to see them, but don't you care about them? So then every child in this world is someone's child. And if you go enough generations forward, then everyone in this world is your child. It is said in the Bible that we are all Adam's and Eva's children. So, if you go forward enough generations, then everyone in this world is your child. So, not just for today, but for posterity. Do what you have to do, ladies and gentlemen. This is a responsibility that lay on your shoulders. This may not be holy Nibbana that we are talking about, but like I have a duty and a responsibility as a human being, as a civilian, as a citizen of my country, and as a human being who shares this world with everyone. There's a responsibility that we all have to bear on our shoulders. We can't just shrug our shoulders and just say, nah, not my cup of tea, I just say I'm to a Nibbana. No. Nibbana must happen 24/7. All the time, Nibbana. Nibbana is a very private affair, isn't it? That's a private affair. Do all this while you're doing Nibbana. Don't give up on that. Do everything I've just asked you to do, but with Nibbana at heart. So Nibbana will happen. But this is also something that you have to do. As responsible members of the community, of the world, of humanity. Bring back that spirituality back home. Start there. Shall we leave it there for today? Okay. I have a short video to show you, just remembered. As I mentioned, I went to India for a couple of days. Long story short, there's a long story. Those who came in yesterday know it's a very long story. But the short story of that is, you remember once Swami, Sadguru Sri Madhusudan Sai, he visited our monastery. And on the day of his visit, we had a chat and he spoke with Guru Swami Mahansi. And during that conversation, he was quite inspired and very impressed by what he'd heard. As Guru Handro explained his understanding of the truth of this universe, he began to realize, I think, that what we were spreading was not a religion, but the truth of this world. The truth that applies regardless of religion, faith, background, belief, gender, age, whatever. And so on that day, he committed himself and said, I would like to be part of this mission of spreading the truth. Let's not call it, we need not call it Buddhism. Let's spread the truth. So he said, let me be part of that. And he said, we have an online radio. So as part of this One World, One Family organization, which is a huge organization made up of volunteers and people who give themselves up selflessly. They also have amongst hospitals, schools and centers where they treat and heal and feed. They also have an online radio on which they share his teachings. So in and amongst these teachings, he wanted to share what he heard from Guru Handu on that day. And so fast forward some months, we started working together with their teams. And when I visited them a couple of days ago, they made an opportunity of that to launch a podcast. The talks that we do at Gateway, as the first of those series in the podcast. So I have a short video just to introduce you to the podcast, and I think this is going to be a great opportunity because he has a huge follower base. People who are devoted to him. And so, which far exceeds the number of people who listen to these talks. Only you people listen to these talks. No one else is interested. Because you have to be able to put up with what I say. Right? So not everyone's interested. But he has a huge follower base, I think in millions, tens of millions, if not more, if not in hundreds of millions. So those are people to whom we can take this message through this channel. So every Sunday, at some point, I still don't know what time it's going to be, but they're going to be streaming this on the online radio, and it's also going to be available as a podcast, which is of course available to consume as and when. So let me just play that video for you, just to introduce you to the podcast.
Welcome to The Art of Being Happy, Buddha's Guide to Modern Living from Jethavanarama Buddhist Monastery, Sri Lanka. This intriguing talk series brings timeless Buddhist wisdom to help you navigate life's challenges through simple, practical insights. Each episode offers gentle guidance for finding peace and joy in everyday moments. Join us on this journey toward lasting happiness and inner peace. Brought to you by Sanatana Vani, the voice eternal.
Okay, let us all take a moment to transfer the merits that we have allocated today by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, by inviting the Swaminarayans to deliver the sermon, as well as creating a conducive environment for all to come along and practice the Dhamma. First and foremost, let us take this opportunity to transfer the merits that we have all acquired to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed them down to the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer this merits to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer this message to the Mahanayakas, the Anunayakas of all of the chapters throughout the world who have committed themselves to protect and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer this message to my teacher, Guru Swami Mahanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also transfer this message to our devotees who, for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes all of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandfathers, uncles, aunts, cousins, neighbors and nieces. Let us also transfer these merits to those who have made great efforts on our behalf, who have gone the extra mile on our behalf and have left no stone unturned to make our lives as comfortable as it could be. Therefore, with a sense of gratitude towards all of them, let us transfer the merits we have earned. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcoming obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sarvam, sarvam, sarvam. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmanas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfill and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us transfer this message to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer this message to our forefathers, our ancestors, people who have passed away in our name, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life and practice the path. Let us transfer this message to members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives in the wars with their friend or foe. Let us transfer this message to those who lost their lives in natural calamities and disasters such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara they will all have been mothers to us, fathers to us, friends of ours. And with an abundance of compassion and loving kindness for all that they have done for us in this long journey of samsara, let us transfer these merits to all of them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success become Arahatan Mahanse or an Arahatiranin Mahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Buddha himself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga Nibbana parama sukhayam
Sukhita Paravatma Nibbana Parama Sukhayam Sukhita Paravatma Raga Vini Niveva Dvesha Vini Moha gini niveva nivansapala deva nivansapala deva nivansapala deva
Tunvarge suvisi ananta mahaguna gane siru loka siru sattva Nibbana Parama Sukhayen Sukhita Paravatma Sadhu Sadhu.